Beaverbrook Motors is located in Runnymede, New Jersey. They offer fast and reliable towing, as well as emergency road services. In addition, Beaverbrook Motors offers a full-service collision center. Beaverbrook Motors is conveniently located at 1253 North Black Horse Pike in Runnymede, New Jersey, 08078. For more information, call 856-931-8882 or check out beaverbrookmotors.com.
Love Talk Radio.
Fuck me!
Is there anyone there?
I'm the beast and the best in the world. Paul, say something stupid.
I look in the mirror and what do I see? Some kind of slacker looking back at me. Ain't nothing lost that can't be found, and it's never too late to change.
Talk Radio, yeah, this is the Macho Man Randy Savage, and that's the only place to listen to wrestling, I do believe, yeah, dig it, yeah.
Talk Radio. I am the Dean of Credibility, Double D, and you can find me at Folsom County. With me, as always, is the above-average comedian, Dan the Man Lol. Call it Chico.
I choked. That's okay. Sorry, I had to. I was wondering if you're trying to find something witty to say. You find me at DanLaw83. That's why it's so confusing, actually.
It is. It is. It's the day I had that on my mind. Now, with us again?
I'm sorry. Can I change that without losing my account?
Change what?
The screen name, the actual screen name to my Twitter.
Well, yeah, you could change it, but anybody that did an at before, it won't link up.
Oh, well, then it stays.
Yes, indeed it stays, but someone who isn't going to change their Twitter handle is Omega Squad Chris Green. How are you tonight?
I'm just
that's,
peachy.
That's funny, Dean.
Follow me at Omega Squad.
There
at
you
least
go.
Today.
No, because he was talking about switching it earlier.
Was he? I did not know that.
Yeah. Yeah, he did.
Really? What would you change it to? You are a known entity now as Omega Squad.
Well, I think I'm just dropping the squad.
Oh.
I was thinking about that.
Yes, Dean. He's popping a squad.
Yes.
Well, there you go. Of course, you can follow us on the blog at HIACTalkRadio.com. You can also follow us on Twitter, HIACTalkRadio. Follow the Facebook or like it, whatever you want to do with it. I prefer you like it.
I prefer you like it a lot.
So like it, and that's Facebook.com/HIACTalkRadio. We're also on iTunes and Stitchers, and of course, our home is here, blogtalkradio.com/HellInACell. And you can call in 718-664-7425. 9133, because tonight we have Bandido. And Dan, he has been in some great matches in CZW as of late.
I mean, just talking about literally the last 30 days. The last 30 days alone have been incredible matches, incredible stuff. To the point where, you know, it's hard not to just be a mark out for him. A mock out for him.
Got a little New Yorkish on there?
A little bit.
Kind of mock out, yep.
Mock out for Bandido. What the hell happened? That's great.
And Dan, somebody who has been with CZW from pretty much its inception, Robbie Marino. The Wild Sicilian will be joining us.
The guy I've already pissed off.
Well, he was a little... Things are smooth over.
I was going to say, have you chatted? Because it's really hard to go to an interview when they're already trying to kill one of us.
It's happened before, Dan.
I know, but it's still hard to do.
It's happened before. But no, he has been with CZW from pretty much the very start. He's done just about, worn every type of hat you can in CZW, both figuratively and literally.
Yeah.
The guy is probably more famous for Zandig's rant than anything else. I don't know, but we're going to talk to him about that.
When I was telling Kelly who we're going to have on this week, I was like, you know the interview where Jesus? And she's like, oh. Well, yeah, that.
Yeah, but
that's how she knew
who Robbie Marino was.
Who Robbie Marino was. She, you know, CZW is a foreign world to her.
It's a foreign world to most, but they did a very successful thing this past weekend. Of course, they had Tangled Web. Both our guests were involved, and I think surprisingly, at least from my point of view, just because it seemed like such a not because of the talent involved in the match, but because of how it was put together, that six-man tag match was really a good match.
I thought it was.
And, of course, we're talking Alex Colon, Joe Gacy, and...
Biff Busick.
Biff Busick. How can I forget Biff Busick?
Butthead. That's how I remember, dude. Hey.
however you can remember it, that's probably the best way. But they took on Greg Excellent, Shane Strickland, and Matt Tremont. And stole the show.
We were talking, what the hell is going on with me tonight? We were talking about, if we were live tweeting, if you weren't following us, and if you weren't, shame on you, because it's quite entertaining. We were tweeting on you particularly on why they're put on so early, and after the match was over, we were like, oh, well, okay. Gotcha. But certainly I felt that way.
But it was a great match.
No, that's what I mean. It really was. And once you mentioned, I didn't think about it until you mentioned, oh, why are they going out early? It was amazing in every aspect.
Joe Gacy even ascended to the second rope and did a moonsault onto the floor.
Not only that, did you see the picture that was taken of him doing it?
Yeah.
Midair?
Yeah.
That's been the desktop background for a while.
There you go.
I mean, it's just, Joe is not a small guy. He's not a big guy, but he's not a small guy. And the fact that he pulled that off, what the hell is that music coming from?
What music?
Well, I muted me, so you didn't hear it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was coming from the other TV. I forgot to shut.
Well, you started talking about music. I wasn't sure, Dan.
Sorry. I know. I'm trying to be professional here. And
I thought we were seeing you finally break down.
No. We're good. No, not yet. No,
he's losing it, Dean. He's losing it.
You hear the music? They're telling me to jump out the window. No, it's going to be much more entertaining when I finally lose it, I have a feeling.
But speaking of losing it, Dan, I think it's time for What Grinds Your Gears.
Well, it appears I've been fired. Well, as long as I'm no longer working here, let me tell you something. You know what really grinds my gears? You, America. You. We'll be right back.
conversation with this one on this week, and I'm going to pull this right out of Cloud 9. And what grinds my gears? What the WWE's doing with The Miz.
There you go. We were talking about that off air, see?
What? Thank you. I'm a professional, Dean. Well, that's debatable. Anyway, I knew you were thinking it. Is there a reason at all why he is being delegated to this, what feels like basically the host of the show now? Or at least the host of like he's basically Roddy Piper without the wrestling part and the good comeback. Is there a reason? Did he piss somebody off in the office? Did he not wrestle a match the way he was supposed to wrestle? What was it, a year and a half? It was 2 years ago. He was headlining WrestleMania, and now he's Miz TV. Does this not bother anybody else as a fan?
Take it, Omega.
I don't know. I mean, he's very good at the non-wrestling parts of wrestling, especially the media work and he's not bad on commentary. The segment thing, you can take it or leave it, but he's not horrible at it.
No,
I don't know. I mean, I think he's just, they don't have anything for him right now.
There's four or five segments a show where I could go, gee, I'd really like to see The Miz wrestle. let me clarify. I'm not taking a shot at the segments. They're fine. He's good on the mic. That's not the problem. But I thought he was a hell of a wrestler, considering where that guy came from. He talked crap for a year on The Real World. What was it, like 20 years ago now?
About that.
About, I'm going to be a superstar. I'm going to be on TV one day. I'm going to be a wrestler. Even as a kid, I was like, this guy's on MTV. He's not going to be a wrestler. Whoops.
He's come a long way, like you
he's
said.
He's come an unbelievably long way. Do you think it's more of a, he doesn't care, he's getting paid, or do you think in the back of his mind, like, I just wanted to be a wrestler?
I think he wants to be a wrestler. I mean, I don't know of anybody in that business who doesn't want to be a wrestler. I'm sure Matt Stryker wanted to be a wrestler.
Matt Stryker's gone now, isn't he?
And he's gone, but I mean, I think if I'm in WWE, I'm happy I got a spot, one. But,
right.
Yeah, I want to be a wrestler. I want to be...
Sorry, dude.
Well, I think he had to, they had to cool him off from the figure four thing. I think that was kind of tanking.
That was a bad figure four.
Yeah, and I think they just like, okay, we need to not have him wrestle for a while.
Or just tell him to stop doing a figure four.
Well, that would make sense, Dan.
Hey,
this is WWE we're talking about.
How about you stop doing that for a little while? Oh, okay. I should do something else. Yeah, you should probably do something else. You and Ric Flair, there's a long way.
Well, very good points you both brought up. The Miz, though, do you think he's still has a top-tier run left in him? Or
how old is he? Is he in his late 30s? He's in his, not even his late 30s, right?
I'm assuming he's young.
I think he's, early,
the only reason why I say that, because how old was he? He was, what was it? I seem to think it was around 94, or maybe it was later than that. He was on The Real World.
He was born in 1980.
Oh, okay. So he's 33. I think maybe he's got one more run. I'd like to see him have one more run.
If Christian's got one more run, I think Miz has got one more run.
Did you post it, or did I, speaking of Christian, or was it just on one of my YouTube things, where it was the ladder match he had in TNA, which was really great. And then I thought about him in the WWE now. I'm like, ugh, man. They're punishing him for something. He slept with somebody he shouldn't have. I'm just saying.
Why would you say that? He has a title shot against Alberto Del Rio.
Oh, joy. You know how I feel about Alberto Del Rio.
Yeah, but Christian's got the shot. I mean, I don't know. What was the plan?
I
think he paid for it for a while. I think he paid for going to TNA for a while.
I was
going to
say, you agree, though, at one point he was paying for that.
I don't think he's paying for it anymore now. I mean, if how much more can you punish the guy? He was out for like a year, and he's been ready to come back for like 6 months,
Yeah. That's true.
What do you think, Dean? Do you think at one point he was definitely paying for that?
Doubtful. It's just when you come back from a minor promotion like that, what kind of spot can they give you? You have to build up your credibility again.
All I know, but if you're on top of one promotion, doesn't that give you some credibility into another, or not necessarily?
What about RVD?
RVD, that's a completely... But look, he has a U.S. title shot. He's not back at the world title picture. Granted, he came back for a shot at a world title opportunity, but he's building himself back up again. He certainly didn't come back top tier.
I will say this, though.
I'll reserve judgment. If he does beat Moxley, then I reserve judgment.
And I'll say this, a little side note about Moxley. I love the old matches they're showing on CZWI pay-per-views, first of all. Number one. Number two, I think, and we're talking about RVD for this moment, the level of matches he is having now on WWE TV were a hell of a lot better the last year and a half he was on TNA. I think, and I've gone on record, and I'll do it again, saying he's pretty much phoning it in at one point.
Well, of course he was.
I mean, he's like, F these guys, they don't care. And all the other problems they have had the last couple months alone is proving I don't think they give a damn. I really think they're in more trouble than they're letting on.
TNA we're talking about now.
Yes, sir.
Probably. TNA is such a... I don't know. How can you get into anything they do?
How do you go to a live event and not have permits for 90% of your superstars?
Because you fire your guy and head of talent development 3 days early? Probably.
That was a good idea, I think.
Yeah, I don't know.
But the last couple months, barring the figure four things you can look past, I guess. But past that, it was one of the things, my fiance and I still sit down and watch wrestling, and that was one of the things that we were really enjoying. He was getting a push again, it seemed. The whole Ric Flair thing when he came back, all right, Flair's putting his hat in the ring with The Miz. Okay, this might lead to something. And then, I don't know, that grinds my gears, Waka Waka.
Well, you brought it all the way back, Dan. I'm proud of you on that one.
Thank you.
I really
more credibility with you, sir?
You get a gold star.
Oh, well, my God, all these months without one.
Yeah, you finally get one, huh? You finally got the...
Thank you, Dean.
So what else is going on, guys?
Yeah. The other thing that grinds my gears... we can talk more about TNA, because that's really starting to piss me off.
I really haven't watched since August 1st.
You're not missing anything.
I know!
Yeah,
I haven't watched. I haven't missed
Kurt
anything.
Angle's drunk and he's in rehab. There you go.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
I mean, it's really this time last year. No, not even this time. Excuse me. Last year. I mean, late. Great. Now I have the hiccups. Late last year, I was touting how I was enjoying that show more than Raw, and I can't watch it now.
Sorry, but you know what I can watch. I can watch Four Loko against the Beaver Boys.
I would watch that
on a loop.
On a loop every week in slow motion, followed by the regular match, back in slow motion, followed by the regular match.
That's what we call a segue on Hell in a Cell Talk Radio. We're going to go to Bandito right after this.
Yeah!
Bandito Jr., how are you doing tonight, sir?
I am doing very well. Thanks for having me again. It's good to be back. Am I ever on time with this?
No.
No.
No, I'm not. I apologize.
No, it's okay. But, as they say, it's radio. It's cool.
Yes, but
and I will say thank you, Bandito, for being late. For because of you, I actually did a good segment on the show.
All right, well, you're welcome. That's what I'm here for.
I have Bandito to thank tonight, Dean.
Well, there you go. The first thing I wanted to bring up is the Beaver Boys, your seeming rivalry now in CZW, because it started out, it was kind of a match I was excited about, but I don't think a lot of the fans were, possibly because of they don't know the Beaver Boys quite that well, but I've seen it before, it's happened before, and I was looking forward to seeing it again. Now, going into that first match back at New Heights, what did you guys try to do? What was your goal? What were you trying to accomplish going into that match?
Well, honestly, we really didn't have a goal going into it. Tommy Dreamer, who was the agent for the match, kind of pulled us aside, and he goes, "All right, guys, this needs to be," and I quote, "this needs to be the Young Bucks against Paul London and Brian Kendrick from House of Hardcore." Mind you, I had never seen, I didn't see the match, but we do know the Young Bucks, who, in my opinion, is the best tag team in wrestling today. And Paul London and Brian Kendrick, they're not too far behind. And I can just imagine what type of match they put on. So, you know, and we kind of, and I remember all four of us kind of looked at him like he had six heads, and he's like, "This is what I was told to tell you," meaning it came from the mouth of DJ Hyde. It's like, you know, like you said, we had wrestled each other before at another promotion. And, you know, we had fun, and it was a great match. So, like, now here we are brainstorming. We're like, okay, well, how, you know, what are we going to do to kind of, you know, exceed the expectation of making that match seem like a Young Bucks, Paul and the Brian Kendrick match? And, you know, we threw in ideas, and we went out there, and you know, we had a blast, you know. And I remember walking through, like, after the match, walking through the curtain and thinking to myself, the match was good. We had incredible, you know, we had great crowd reaction, you know, throughout the match. But I don't know if I would have ever thought it would be considered a match of the year, you know.
Cool.
And then, you know, being pulled to the side and everyone congratulating us on the awesome match we had, you know, we had, Shane Hollister, who is another great talent in CDW, he pulled us to the side. He's like, "Dude, that was awesome. I was on the edge of my seat." And for somebody like him to say that, it really meant a lot. And Tommy Dreamer, you know, he pulled us to the side. He goes, "You did what you were asked to do, and I thank you. That was awesome." And then that was it. You know what I mean? So, you know, everybody just thought it was great. And you know, we had a great time. And like I said, we knew it was good, but we would have never thought we'd get that type of reaction, you know, as far as it being a match of the year candidate or being, you know, even match of the night, you know, being, you got guys like AR Fox on the show and stuff who was always doing crazy things. But it worked out well, and, you know, last weekend, you know, they decided to do it again, you know.
Now, when you know the match is coming, do you guys even sit down and say, okay, this is what we did last time, let's not do it. Do you even talk about it, or do you just do a basis and like, all right, let's go for broke?
Well, I remember when I first got to the building, I saw John Silver and Alex Reynolds, and I remember Alex Reynolds looked at me, he goes, "So, you ready to shit the bed today?" And I go, you know, and you know, they always say, you know, you can't top the first one. It was, going into that match, like, we knew, you know, we had to do something spectacular. And not to mention, you know, the card was stacked from top to bottom. So we're like, okay, now what are we going to do? You know what I mean? And, you know, like I said, you know, with the brainstorming and stuff. Us four know each other so well. Like, we don't have to, like, you know, go and practice certain things or, you know, like, call each other, like, "Hey, listen, what do we," you know what I mean? Like, we could just sit there for a couple of minutes and just, you know, throw each other ideas and, you know, just put everything together. I enjoyed the match we had. I thought it was very good. I don't know if everyone feels like it was better than the first one. I want to say this second match did top the first one only because of the crowd reaction. We got way, you know, we got bigger reactions, maybe because there were more people. But I was certainly, I was happy with it. I, and I don't know, like, I really haven't heard much feedback from it, so I don't know what everybody thought. DJ said, you know, he loved it. We delivered. We did what he asked. So everybody liked it.
The spot against the guard, the guardrail power bomb had my breath taken away. And, you know, I've seen, I mean, Dean and I, God, we have, 50 years of watching wrestling combined.
Yeah.
And there's not much you could do to where, like, and that was kind of like, holy crap, is he dead?
Yeah.
Was there, go ahead, man, for you first.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, it's funny because, like, I remember calling the spot to Johnny, and my initial idea was to, like, sort of have Alex there so he could kind of, like, stumble onto Alex. Never did I imagine, Johnny just taking the guardrail.
I
remember asking, I said, Johnny, are you sure about this? He's like, yeah, I'll be fine. You sure? I was like, yeah, I'll be fine. I was like, you positive? He's like, yeah, I just don't want the back of my head to hit the guardrail. And, like, that kind of, like, you know, struck me a little bit. I was like, oh, damn it. Like, this could either go really well or it could go really bad. And, you know, thank God, you know, it wasn't so bad. I think it did knock his air out, but, you know, he was okay after that. And it was a success, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, well, here's, all right, I have two follow-ups. Did he even feel it at the time other than the air getting knocked out of him?
I don't know. I tried to ask him if he was okay, and all I could hear him was, you know, I could hear him trying to catch his breath, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, you know, after the match, he said he was okay. He said he was fine. And I remember, like, before the match, he's like, oh, my elbow was bothering his elbow was bothering him. And I remember, like directly after him with Johnny, you okay? You sure you're all right? He's like, yeah, I'm fine. I'm good. I was like, you sure? I was like, yeah. And then, like, 5 minutes later, I'd walk up to him, Johnny, you okay? He's like, no, yeah, like, I'm fine. Like, even the pain in my elbow went away. And I was like, oh, it's probably your adrenaline. You know what I mean?
Oh, good.
But, yeah.
All I know is it was my fiance's first CZW live show to watch. And when that spot happened, I looked over, oh, great, Bandito killed it.
Oh, shit.
That's just great.
Sorry, I guess. But
no, it was awesome because I just smiled at her.
Yeah, but it was just one of those things. It's like I said, man, like that card was stacked. Like, I remember listening to crowd reaction from the very first match to the very last. It was like the crowd was into it all the way. And, you know, the guys have like AR, you have guys like AR Fox, Russell, Andrew Everett, that's his name, right? Everett.
Yeah.
You know, you already knew right off the bat that was going to be something, you know, spectacular. And then, like, the six-man or the eight-man, I don't remember how many. Like, even, like, the reactions they were getting were like, wow, like, all right, like, we got to put work in. You know what I mean? Like, okay, like, people are expecting this to be something. It's got to be better than what's going on right now. And I don't know if it was better, but what's that?
No, go.
Oh, no, and you know, we just went out there. We did our thing, you know. And we kind of, at that point, you kind of leave it up to the fans or to whoever's watching, you know, let them think whether it was good, better than the first one, or it was just as good, or, you know.
All right, so getting back to that first match, of course, the spot that Dan and I thought were, what was the spot of the match might have been, I think, the spot that kind of transcended the match into a different level, and that was the super kick spot.
Oh, yeah.
You told us about that backstage at New Moon Rising Wrestling. Just tell us, like, how that came to be, because you were against it.
Yes. I had done that spot. I'm trying to remember if we did it at that tag match we had at that tournament. You remember that tournament, guys? You know,
I remember that tournament. It was a tournament down a little bit further south, right?
Yeah. Did we do it at that? We did do it at that match, right?
I believe so.
Yeah, I think we did.
I can't remember clearly enough, so I'll pretend it was new.
Yeah, I'll give the credit to Johnny Silvers. He was doing, like, Johnny is just the type of guy is like, I'm almost convinced that he just, like, spews, like, ideas out of the top, like, off the top of his head, and he was like, hey, I want to let's do a 4-way super kick. Hey, can we super kick a fan? Like, you know, just stuff like that. And we're just like, yeah, sure, let's do it. You know what I mean? And the two times the first two times I did it, like I said, we did it at the ECWA, and then we did it in an Ironman, a four-way Ironman match I had at over at NYWC, where it was myself, John Silver, Tony Nese, and Mike Tartaglia's Golden Boy Papadon, and we did the four-way super kick, and I remember I got kicked in my ribs, and I got aired out, and I was like, oh, never again, you know what I mean? And then they called it over when we were going to do the match at CZW, and I was like, oh, do we have to? And he's like, yeah, let's do it. We'll get a reaction. I was like, all right, I guess we'll do it. And sure enough, it got a big reaction, you know?
I know, but
God,
he threw me off with the golden.
The Papa, the golden point. Stop it, you know.
I like Papadon. Papadon, it's all love. He knows that.
Well, great. So now, we are gonna get beat up.
I don't plan on seeing him anytime soon.
Well,
so.
I was gonna say before you ask your question, the reason why I can't remember is when I think of that state, I try to forget stuff.
Anyway, but the next, in the follow-up match, your rematch that you just had this past Saturday, you guys played it off again. It looked like you guys were going to go for the four-way spot, so I thought that was really well done because you teased it again, and then you didn't give it to us. That was
right, yeah. We knew how big, you know, that spot was in the first match, you know, that, like, CZW managers, like, they even put it online and stuff. And, you know, like, I remember the first idea was we have to do that spot, whether it's we do it kind of sort of different or we tease it or – and I remember all four just agreed. We were like, yep, no, we have to. It was just something that had to be done. And we did throw a couple of ideas around, and then initially, you know, we just came up with the idea, well, how about we block it and, you know, we do something different. You know what I mean? It's almost like, you know, when you go out on a date with a girl for the first time, like, you can't just give her everything that one night. You got to want her to come back for more, you know what I mean? And that's what we want. Like, we wanted the fans, like, you know, it was our, like, there were high expectations. The fans wanted to see it again because the first one was so good. So, you know, we had to switch it up a little bit, you know?
That's one of those spots where you could hear, just sitting here doing the interview, you can hear the sound it makes in your head. That's amazing. Was there any point in the match, the second match, where you guys had any, lack of better term, any brain farts or any like, oh God, we're sticking it up, or did just the crowd reaction just keep you going on autopilot?
That's what we kind of base our stuff off of, you know, whether things are going well or not. You know, sometimes the crowd's not really into it. Maybe we'll cut something out or we'll shorten a spot or something. But, you know, I think, like, with all the ideas we had for the match, we just wanted to get there, like, no matter what type of reaction they got. And I think, you know, a lot of stuff didn't get big reactions, maybe because whether it was our timing or their timing, you know, maybe it was off a little bit and may have been a little too much, or maybe it wasn't too much. You know what I mean? I think towards the end, we could have done a better job at getting crowd reaction, you know. But all in all, I was just happy with it. And, you know, the other three guys, they were happy with it as well. So
That leads me to a follow-up I just thought of. And it leads me to this. I've seen you work, even when you're not in a match, I've seen you work on the outside and try to get the crowd into it, and it sometimes fails. Does that ever lead to the match being bad, or does at that point do you say, screw them, we're doing this anyway? You know what I'm talking about.
As a performer. No, I understand completely. Me as a performer, I rely on the match to get crowd reactions, whether they're positive or negative. You know, I have the bad habit of, like, if I'm like, down and I'm selling and I notice the crowd, like, I'd start slapping the mat or clapping my hand or something like that. And, you know, in the beginning of the match, you know, whether, you know, if it's a tag or something, I'll get them into it, you know. But it's almost it's kind of a damper when, like, you're, like, mid-match, you're trying to do it, and it's like they're there, but they're not there. You're like, oh, you know, hopefully they react to this or they react to whatever we're going to do next. But, oh, like, we just still, you know, we go out there. Well, me, myself, like, I'd still perform, you know, I still do everything I'm supposed to do. And, yeah, like, crowd reaction is important because, you know, without crowd reaction, you don't know if they're enjoying it or not. You know what I mean? So it sometimes it puts a damper on it. Other times we're just like, hey, we'll just go with the flow. You know what I mean?
All right. Now I'm switching gears completely because I'm going to save another question about those matches for the end. But I want to talk about CTWE and their fifth anniversary farewell show. First of all, what is going on? Fifth anniversary and goodbye?
Yeah, you know what? I don't know the exact story behind it. I have heard different versions. You know, apparently, you know, I've heard that the promoter, you know, he's moving to Florida, Joey Bricco. I heard that because of past shows and, you know, like, they've gotten into a few financial issues that, you know, would prevent them running future shows. I don't know, you know, what it is exactly. I'm assuming we're going to, I'm almost positive we'll hear about it at the show, you know, the day of. But I'll be honest with you, it sucks because I love it there, you know. It's fun there. And if it wasn't for Joey Bricco and CTWE, I wouldn't have had matches that I had this year that were just, you know, beyond great, in my opinion. You know, I would have never had the chance to, you know, be in the ring with guys like Adam Cole and Michael Elgin and, you know, Brian Fury. These guys, they're just awesome talents. And for me to, you know, for a promoter to consider me to be good enough to be in the ring with them, it's just, you know, it's special. And it really does suck, though. Like, I wish they weren't in closing, but I guess, you know, things happen and you kind of embrace it, you know. But I really do appreciate everything that they did for me, all the opportunities that they've given me, and hopefully one day they'll be back, you know, but I guess for the time being, we'll just have to wait and see.
So the August 24th show, that's going to be the fifth anniversary, it's also the farewell, but you have an open challenge.
Care to
talk about that?
I was asked, I was like, hey, any idea what I'm doing at this show? And they're like, oh, well, you know, you have an open challenge. And I was like, okay, well, you know, with who? And I think they announced it already, but it was going to be answered by Christian Frost. Nothing against him. I've never seen him work, but, you know, I always look forward to wrestling no matter who it is. But I remember thinking to myself, I was like, man, like, you know, they got guys like Eddie Edwards and Johnny Gargano and a bunch of other guys on the show. I was like, I would have loved to, you know, wrestle, you know, one of them. No, you know, nothing against Christian Frost, but, like, you know, with where I want to go in my career, I think, you know, I thought being in the ring with one of those guys would help it go in that direction. But, you know, it is Christian Frost, and I'm going to go, and we're going to do, you know, I'm going to do what I always do there. You know, I just want to impress the crowd, you know, make sure I do my job the right way, and just have a good time, you know.
Last thing, as you look back at your time in CTWE, what would you say is your biggest thing you take away from it?
What do you mean? I'm sorry, can you just
clarify? Well, just like your biggest match, your biggest memory, what was the biggest moment for you in CTWE?
I have two biggest moments, and that was obviously wrestling Adam Cole and Michael Elgin. My match with Cole was phenomenal. I to this day watch it over and over. Michael Cole is an incredible performer, and I was glad that I had the opportunity to have that match with him there. And Michael Elgin, we all know what Michael Elgin can do or what he's done, and you know, being able to perform with him was very special as well.
All right, Dan, go ahead. You had a few questions.
In reference to the last couple of matches, we mentioned your dad and his history in wrestling before and the fact that you guys wrestled a match together. Does he ever see one of these matches? Do you ever get a phone call from your dad and he goes, "That was amazing"?
No. He'll call me and he'll be like, I have a 7-year-old nephew. He'll call me. He's like, "Lee was watching your match and he loved it." And he's like, "It was a good match." You know what I mean? Like, that was it. You know. But I know he watches, and whether or not he comments on it, I do know he watches. So
I was gonna say, is he one of those fathers that kind of doesn't really tell you verbally that I'm watching, and that's awesome?
No, yeah, like you'll watch, you'd be like, "Oh, okay, that's cool." You know what I mean? Like, you wouldn't go into detail, and that's just the way he is. You know what I mean?
I'm better than you, son.
Yeah. Like, he would always say, "You're a natural. You're good at what you do. Just keep doing it." You know, and he wants to see me succeed even more. You know.
Yeah. That's awesome.
So after a match like you had with the Beaver Boys, he would just say something like, "Yeah, that was good, but I was in Madison Square Garden."
Yeah. But you know what? Like, even if he said, "Hey, that was good, like, that's what he meant. Like, "Hey, that was good, but you still haven't made it to the Garden." You know what I mean?
Here, come back to me when you wrestle in front of 20,000. Thank you very much.
Yeah, but you know what? He supports me, and now, he's always, "Oh, when's your next show? You know, he's not too fond of the farther ones, but he's always asking when my next show is. If they're close enough, he'll come and watch. You know, it's just one of those things. Like, he's around for so long, and I think, you know, I guess it's time for me to like savor the moment and do what he did. You know what I mean?
Okay, and of course, since last time we talked, you actually debuted and had a few matches for New Moon Rising Wrestling. What are your thoughts? Because you had your last time there, you took on a young up-and-comer.
Yes, I've known Jake Bishop for a very long time. He's actually wrestled for my dad a few times. And, my buddy Brawley, who's tag champs there, he's like, "Hey, you know, you should come down to New Moon one day, you know." And I remember I think they were running. I didn't have a show, and I was like, "Hey, you know," I contacted somebody, and I was like, "Hey, you know, I'm free. Is there any room on the show?" They're like, "Yeah, sure. You know, come on down." And I love it there. You know, you guys are there. It's always a good time seeing you guys, and a lot of good friends of mine are there. You know, Brawley, Crazy Ivan, and you know, I've also met a lot of new people, and I'm all about meeting new guys. You know, in the same profession I'm in, but it's definitely a good time. My match with Lance, it was fun. It was hot. It was extremely hot. I think at one point, like, the lights flickered, didn't it? Like, they went off and they turned back on or something?
Yeah. It was probably longer for you in the ring, but outside, they just flickered a little bit. I was like, "Oh, here we go."
Yeah, I was like, I remember that happened. I was like, "Do we end it here? Like, what do we do? I don't know what to do." And I think it was, like, pouring rain out.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, no. Yeah, we had a full power outage. Yeah, no, we lost power. Yes. I'm running going, "Hey, can you turn the lights on?"
Yeah, there's a match going on. Like, what do we do? Like, do we start over? I don't know. You know, I didn't know what to do. But I love it. It's always a good time. And, you know, usually we after the show, we'll take a ride down to AC, and we'll hang out in Atlantic City. And I remember that weekend, the next day we did Sports Facts for WXW. And, so that night we went to LA and we hung out, you know, whatever. And then I remember Lance was like, "We should just drive to Allentown right now. It's 5 a.m. And I was like, "Are you kidding? It's like a 2-hour drive." He's like, "Yeah, I think we should just go now." And I was like, "Well, let's go then." Yeah. We drove from New Moon, went to Atlantic City. From there, we drove down to Sports Fest. And that was fun. You know, sports. I love going to WXW. Even, you know, when I first went there, when Pops, or as you know, Asa was there. He gave me an opportunity, and Samu, you know, welcomed me with open arms all the time. And it was a fun. It was definitely a fun weekend. Great weekend.
So, what'd you get? Like 3 hours of sleep that weekend?
I think I slept like an hour. To be
oh
honest.
Oh my god. No.
I think I slept. I slept in my car for. It was me, Hanson, Lance, and Brawley, and I like. I'm driving, they're asleep, and, like, we get to a rest stop at, like, 7 in the morning, and I was like, I got to sleep at least a couple of minutes. I think I slept a half hour. Then we got to the school. We hung out because, you know, we got there so early. Lance took us to the school, and, like, they had, like, a couch, you know, they had a couch there and stuff, and I remember Hanson popped in a couple of old WWF DVDs, or we watched, we actually watched Samu against Ric Flair in Hawaii. And like in the early 80s, and like we popped that in, and I remember I fell asleep right on the couch for another half hour that we had to drive to the show.
Jeez.
Yeah, I mean, it's moments like that. You create stories, and that's what being a wrestler is all about, having stories and having fun, you know?
Are you working this weekend?
This weekend? What am I doing this weekend? No, I'm not. I'm actually... I was thinking of hanging out over at the Ring of Honor show in New York City.
Wrong answer.
Yeah.
No.
but I know New Moon has a show, but you know, Ring of Honor is definitely somewhere I would like to be. So you know, I kind of want to go and show my face and meet people and you know, kind of interact with you know, with whoever it is I should be interacting with. As far as getting a shot there. But I am aware that New Moon is running that night. My buddy Brawley
actually that's a little more important, man, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like I said, I enjoy it, but, you know, there's other things.
No, I hear you.
You know?
Jeez, you
I mean, but who knows? I'm the type of person. I'd be saying this to you now, and Saturday morning I'd wake up, all right, I'm going to New Moon. I need to wrestle, you know?
Now, yeah, my last question.
We were on air.
Hello?
Bandito?
No,
I'm here.
It's me.
I'm
I
here.
Keep cutting out.
Okay.
I'm here.
Stop
cutting
out. Okay, we're all fine here. We're
yes.
all fine. Okay, but my last question is, do you know if there is going to be a third match? Four Loko against the Beaver Boys. Are we going to settle this finally?
I would love to. I think there are a couple of ideas being thrown around, but as of right now, I couldn't say yes and I couldn't say no because I honestly don't know. I don't know in what direction they're going with this. Like I said, I don't think they had any long-term plans. Because I don't think they expected for our first two matches to be so good. So I honestly don't know. I would love for us to have a third match and just, you know, just go balls to the wall, you know what I mean?
Definitely.
I'll be honest, I wouldn't put it past them to do a third match. And I think the four of us would love to have at least one more match there and, you know, try to top the other two, you know? So we'll,
all right.
We'll just have to wait and see.
All right, Bandito. I think we covered a lot of ground here tonight.
Yes.
Is there any place that the good, fine people can follow you and your career as you go around this crazy wrestling world?
I am on Twitter. You can follow me @1Bandito Jr. You know, I always post whatever shows I have coming up. I do have a ton of shows coming up. The following weekend, 23rd, I do have ECPW here in Paramus, New Jersey, CTWE over in Connecticut for their farewell show. And that Sunday, my dad is actually running a show here at a carnival they're having here in my town, so I'll be doing that. I'll be making my debut for Wrestle Jam on September 7th. What else is coming up? That's all I got for now. I can't think of anything else I got coming up. I have been contacted by a couple of promotions from the Connecticut area. RWE contacted me to work a feature show for them in November, so I have that coming up. House of Glory, I believe they're having a tag tournament soon, and you know, they asked us to be a part of that, so we'll be there. Liberty States is actually having a tournament to crown their first ever Extreme Champion, I think they're calling it, and I'll be on that. I'm on that. Mo Sexton, Matt Stryker, I think, is on that as well. And,
ooh.
You know, just take it show by show, you know what I mean? I'm sorry. FWE, actually. At FWE in October, they are having a Grand Prix tournament, which features guys like Jay Lethal, Colt Cabana, Joey Ryan, Paul London, Sanjay Dutt, Mike Bennett, Carlito, Tommy Dreamer. And that night, I'll be teaming with Trent Barretta. As random as that is, Trent and I will be teaming up for the very first time. And we're going to be facing the Young Bucks and their current tag champs, Adrenaline Express, I believe their name, or Adrenaline Rush, Adrenaline Express. I'm sorry, I'm killing this for them, but they're the current tag champs. It's a three-way tag, and, you know, so I'll be there in October, so definitely looking forward to teaming up with Trent for the first time.
Yeah, that sounds like quite an opportunity, but Bandito, thank you again. I hope to
see you
soon.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's always a great time. And this one, sir, is dedicated to you, and I think you know why. I'll tell you what, Omega, it's about time.
Finally.
Omega, this past weekend, an event happened that not too many people cared about, but it was World Series of Fighting.
Yes, it was. Yeah, not too many people cared about this card.
No,
understandably.
Not much happened here.
Well, you know what? I watched it. It was actually a decent card. You know, if you watched it, it actually did the best ratings of the World Series of Fighting to date.
Really?
So, I don't know why, but it did.
Maybe Nick Newell? I don't know, but we'll get into that.
It may be.
Anything on the pre-card that you want to bring up?
On the preliminary?
Yeah.
Gerald Harris defeating Jorge Santiago. I didn't see the fight, but, you know, I guess probably the only notable one on there, if you want to call it notable.
We're never going to get an interview with somebody from World Series of Fighting.
Not well.
Not with this.
Not their prelim card, anyway.
Now, anyway, moving on to the main card, I notice a former UFC name. He fell into some hard luck in UFC, but he's back in World Series of Fighting, Tyson Griffith. And it looks like he still has some trouble.
Well, he actually put on a good fight versus JZ Cavalcante.
That was always what he did, though. He always put on a good fight.
Yeah, he always puts on a good fight. It was interesting. You watch this fight. You see the first fight was the first round, very high pace, very very quick. Guys throwing shots, dodging some takedowns. Was very high pace, very very competitive first round. And then the second round kind of happened, and you started to see things starting to swing Cavalcante's way. He was starting to land more shots. Griffin started missing, and you could kind of sense that the tide was turning and that Jay-Z was slowly pulling away with strikes. And then in the third round, eventually Jay-Z got Griffin down and threatened with some submissions and then just basically ground and pounded him out. But it was a good fight, a very good fight to start off. I wasn't expecting much out of it, and it was pretty good, though.
Well, I always liked Tyson. I thought he was a good fighter, but like I said, just some hard times. He lost a lot of fights in a row, and finally he got the hook from UFC.
Yeah.
Now, the next fight, I know nothing, but it looks like it ended second round 4:32.
Well, Race Ray Sefo is the president of World Series of Fighting.
Really?
Really? He is a multi-time Muay Thai kickboxing champion.
Doesn't always translate well to mixed martial arts.
It doesn't, but in this case, he was doing fine. These are two heavyweights. It was actually a good heavyweight fight. Guys were throwing some real bombs, and Sefo was basically daring Hakuba to kind of come in, and I think Sefo was going for counter strikes, and it eventually turned against him because Hakuba was able to put Sefo away. Just unrelenting shots from Hakuba, just standing and just basically pasting Sefo until the ref just finally had to call it. It was a good fight. I mean, if you're looking to see heavyweights just throwing leather, this was the fight for you because that's pretty much all they were doing.
Sefo's
got some nasty kicks too. You could see he probably would translate, but I think he's 2-2 now. In mixed martial arts, but he's not long for the world, I don't think. I mean, both these guys are, I think Sefo's 42 and Hakuba's 39 or 40. So, I mean, neither of these guys are going much of anywhere. I mean, I guess Sefo from the It's Good to Be the Boss. So
yeah, more like a hobby at this point.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's had 100 fights between Muay Thai and MMA, so I mean, it's not like he's not a fighter, you know. So
wow,
but he's a fighter on the tail end of his career. So
now the next one, this is kind of surprising. I didn't know how the fight finished. Apparently, it was an anaconda choke in the first round, and that's Nick Newell. Now, if you don't know Nick Newell, he has one hand.
Yes,
and somehow he pulled off an anaconda choke. You're going to have to walk me through this one.
It wasn't precisely an anaconda choke. It was kind of like a guillotine where he kind of laid on it, and so he kind of grabbed him with the one arm like you would see in a normal guillotine, but instead of throwing the other hand over, he just kind of twisted it like an anaconda choke, twisted his body and put the pressure on that way.
Okay.
So his weight was kind of leaning on him. Newell looked good. He looked very good. He looks, like I'm not going to say he's a world beater, but he is looking very, very impressive, especially for a guy who's got one hand. He's got great athleticism. He's got speed, and he's got pretty dang good wrestling. I mean, I think he said he's had over 300 wrestling victories in his career.
Oh, wow.
So he's really, I'm not going to go so far as to call him a prospect because I think he's doing fine at the level he's at right now. I worry if we go on the assumption he's going to get to the UFC eventually, I think he's going to have trouble with the elite fighters. Elite fighters aren't just going to give him their neck. But I think he's got potential. He's got name value. I think people would like to watch his fights. I think he fights very, very entertainingly. He's fast. He's athletic. And it's a great story. So I mean, I think we'll see where he goes from here. I think they said he was going to fight for their lightweight title pretty soon here.
Oh,
if I'm not mistaken, but I could be wrong.
Well, there you go. And I think it's a story that USC would eventually catch on to.
You know, I wouldn't be surprised to see him in the UFC eventually, especially if he keeps racking up victories.
Yeah. Now the lightweight. Do you have anything to say about them? They both went to decision.
Well, I mean, the Moraes-Hempelman fight, it wasn't that great a fight. I mean, it was okay. The first round was very bloody. Hempelman was very bloodied up. Looked awful. I thought the doctor was going to stop it, but they let it go on, and he managed. It wasn't a bad fight, but it was kind of mediocre. Tyrone Sprong is the, He is a Dutch kickboxer. He looks like a smaller Overeem.
Okay.
And it kind of got that same kind of build, that same kind of background of kickboxing. He was obviously the more skilled fighter in that fight. But Deonda amazingly kept up with him, ate some really hard punches and managed to... we even won a round on one judge's card. it was he hung right in there. But he absorbed some pretty nasty shots. Spong has definite power. A little green on the MMA side yet. I think a good wrestler could take those long legs out from under him, and we'd have to see what kind of ground game he's got. But from a pure striking perspective, he's got all the tools. So.
All right. Now, the next event will be September 14th. It returns back to the Revel Casino in Atlantic City, New Jersey. And the main event is, you know, Arlovski must be so happy that the World Series of Fighting is around.
Yeah, probably.
Because he's still fighting somehow.
As long as he's fighting, he's main eventing.
I know. That's what I'm saying. He must be so happy. He's taking on Mike Kyle in the main event. And there's a four-man tournament as well for the middleweight championship. So
yeah.
It should be interesting, to say the least.
Well, I mean, you know, it's on NBC Sports Network. If you have it, you might as well watch it. I'm not seeing any world beaters coming out of World Series of Fighting, but, you know, and there's probably prospects coming up that'll come through eventually if they continue to garner ratings. I don't think Arlovski is going to draw much, but, I mean, at least you have a name on there that people recognize that people are going to want to watch. I mean, that's unlike this card, which did very well from a ratings perspective. Arlovski still has name value, and maybe some people will want to see him, so we'll see.
Well, there you go. I've just been informed of a few things going on Twitter, so that's where my mind was.
Okay.
Anyway.
I'm not informed of the Twitter happenings.
Yeah, Twitter. Social media, you just have to love it sometimes. Now, of course, this weekend, UFC Fight Night, it's the debut on Fox Sports, whatever the hell it is. Fox Sports 1.
Fox Sports 1.
It's the debut. And boy, did they really put together a card.
They did stack a card in this thing. This is crazy.
Now, I'm just going to talk about the main. There are a few on the preliminary cards that look all right, but I'm just going to talk about the main card here.
Sure.
OSP is back on the Facebook preliminary.
Yes, I know you're down with OSP.
So. Oh, yes. Yes. OSP is, yes.
He's your favorite.
You know what? I got him confused, though. Last time I was talking about OSP, I actually met the other guy, Woodley.
Oh, okay.
They remind me so much of each other. OSP, I actually kind of enjoy.
Yeah.
Just so we're caught up on things.
Clarifying that? Okay.
Clarifying it. Now, Joe Lauzon returns. He's taking on Michael Johnson. How do you feel about that one, Omega?
Well, you know, Michael Johnson has been somewhat of a disappointment in the UFC. He was very highly touted coming out of the Ultimate Fighter. Thought he was going to be a kind of second coming of Rashad Evans. Hasn't really been that. He's run into some very difficult fights recently. Had some very poor losses to Miles Jury and Reza Madadi. And running up against the perennial fight of the night contender Joe Lauzon, it is not good for your career. Lauzon is just that type of fighter. He's always in an exciting fight. He's had so many really good fights. He's won three of his last five. His only losses in the last five are to Jim Miller and Anthony Pettis, both very good fighters. Picked up a win against Jamie Barner, a win against Melvin Gillard. He's that type of fighter who can grab a submission at any time, wades into the battle and can overwhelm you with strikes and ground and pound. I don't see this going the way of Johnson. I think Johnson has not shown me anything of note and anything recent here. So I think this is Joe Lauzon's way to a knockout of the night, potentially.
All right. And Lauzon is a very exciting fighter. So it should be good to see. Didn't he take on the Miller brother?
He took on Jim Miller, lost to Jim Miller.
Yeah, that bloody elbow fight. That was really just a fight with elbows.
Yeah, it was pretty.
He had a vet challenge, and the vet challenge was, just use your elbow, Jim.
Yeah.
And that's what he did. Yep. We also have Uriah Hall taking on John Howard.
Yeah, that one is another interesting fight. You know, Hall is the more skilled fighter here, even though he's coming off his loss in his last fight, his last UFC fight to Kelvin Gastelum in the Ultimate Fighter finale of the 17th season. You know, he's fighting a late replacement here in John Howard, who is just coming back from the UFC. You know, Howard lobbied for this fight because it's his last UFC stint ended up fairly convincing losses to Matt Brown, Thiago Alves, and Jake Ellenberger. So he does not have the type of skills to come up against the elite of that division. You know, he's rattled off some really good wins on the independent circuit, though. Six of his last seven. So he's got some wins chalked up, but I don't think he's going to have put on a scintillating performance here, but I think he's going to pick up the decision win here.
All right. Now Matt Brown taking on Mike Pyle.
You know, this is a very interesting fight to me. These are two guys that are on career resurgences. You look at Matt Brown, who a couple years ago looked like he was on his way out of the UFC, had lost four of his last five at one time, and since then he's rattled off five wins, particularly his last win against Jordan Mean, who was a highly touted prospect coming out of Strikeforce. You look at Mike Pyle, a very similar type of resume, had some early losses, had a loss to Rory McDonald, obviously a welterweight contender. Josh Neer looked very good in all those fights. These are two guys that are going to wade in and bang. I see this as a very exciting fight. The difference here is Pyle's chin. He's really, really tough to KO. Matt Brown has had some problems in that area. It has a tendency to get a little over-aggressive and eat a submission. He's been knocked out before as well, but mostly he follows the submission or decision losses. I'm going to lean with Brown here because I think Brown is on that more of an upswing. He's fought the better fighters recently. I think he's a more measured fighter in these recent fights. I see he's fighting a little bit smarter. He hasn't lost his aggressiveness, but he's looked a bit more calculated. I think he's going to have the power to wade in the pile, and he's going to be tough to knock out, but I think he's definitely going to rack up the points and maybe get a ground and pound stoppage here.
Uriah Faber. Uri, how do you see it?
Uri Alcantara. This is another. Again, we're talking stack card. It's another interesting fight. We've talked about Uriah Faber before.
I like, you know what, he's a guy that just can't break through, though.
He is, but you think about the guys he's lost to. In recent years, obviously he was a featherweight champion one time. Since dropping down to bantamweight, he hasn't been champion there, but, you know, his losses are to former champions. His losses in recent years, Mike Thomas Brown, former champion. Jose Aldo, current champion. Dominic Cruz, current champion. Henan Brow, current interim champion. His losses are in title fights. Against everybody else, he's dominant. He's racking up submissions. He's looking really, really good against everybody else except the very top of the food chain. Alcantara is a very athletic guy, a guy who's gonna cause Uriah Faber some problems because he's a proven finisher. He's stopped 24 of his 28 opponents by knockout or submission. He's got a very aggressive striking and very aggressive grappling. But you know, Faber is at the top in the athleticism scale. His wrestling is top notch. He's going to have the ability to give Alcantara fits. He's going to be able to keep that pace up to an insane level, and he's going to probably try to grind out a victory here. He's going to use his quickness. He's going to use his jabs, and eventually he's going to pop that double. and he's going to take Alcantara down. I think it's just a matter of time before Faber gets another submission victory.
I think so, too. Faber, like I said, he just can't break through. That's my biggest thing with him. Now, the co-main event is Alistair Overeem coming back after a humiliating loss, I'd say, to the Bigfoot. Taking on Travis Brown. And Travis Brown, I think, if he has a game plan, could win this.
Potentially. I mean, we've seen Overeem get overly full of himself. I mean, that's basically what happened when he lost to Silva in his last fight. Bigfoot just took advantage of Alistair just kind of standing in front of him. Brown is going to be the more athletic fighter. He's going to be the quicker fighter. I don't know. I think, he's coming off that hamstring loss to Bigfoot. He got the knockout versus Gonzaga. I don't know what we saw of that. It was a very quick knockout, so we didn't really see much of Brown in that fight. So there's still a lot of questions around Brown. Is his hamstring going to hold up to a long fight? But when it comes to it, Overeem is going to be the more skilled fighter. He's going to be the better striker by far. And Overeem has a ground game. Brown's best bet's going to be to try to get Overeem to the ground and try to get either score points or, ground and pound. It's possible. I can see it because Overeem's capable of mistakes. I have a hard time thinking that Overeem, I really see Overeem as a better fighter here. And it's hard to pick against him. Overeem just has the better tools. He has the better striking. I think Overeem's going to get the TKO victory here. I don't think he's going to take Brown lightly because he really needs to make a statement if he wants to keep his spot in the heavyweight rankings. And I don't think he's going to take. I think he's made a mistake against Bigfoot. He's not going to make that same mistake again.
I just think he's a cocky fighter, and I think his days as an elite fighter are over. I'm going with a second round TKO by Brown.
Okay.
Yeah. Second round TKO, my friend. I hope he employs the Brock Lesnar fists as mailbox technique, where you just get the guy down and you just ram your fist into his face over and over
just
again.
Peppered in there until he submits.
I mean, that's what happened against Mir. I mean, it was just bam, bam.
Hammer fists.
Over.
As you said, just mailboxes, lunchboxes, just pounding into your face. Ridiculous. Yeah.
And, of course, we have the main event, and that is Hua taking on Chael Sonnen. And I haven't really heard too much of Sonnen, his trash talk. I don't know. That's what makes a fight interesting when Sonnen's involved in it.
Potentially. I think you're looking at... The thing with Sonnen, he's basically said he's dropping down to middleweight again after this. Because, Anderson Silva's not on top of the division anymore. So, maybe he's going to try to get something out of there. We'll see. First he's got to face Hua and not look stupid doing it. Hua is probably going to be the better athlete or the better fighter here. He's going to have the advantages in power and technique. Obviously, Sonnen's strength is going to be in his wrestling. And if Sonnen can survive the first round of Hua and not get caught with a KO or a submission, I think Sonnen can pull this out. He can take Hua down and you just keep him there like Sonnen does, is basically just keep him there and land some shots from ground and pound, but basically drive out a decision. We've seen Hua before have problems with his cardio.
Mm-hmm.
and he does, he has shown that he can be tired. So, you know, who is best bets to get out of this fight as quickly as possible?
This,
you know,
sounds like fun to watch. This guy.
Sonnen?
Hua.
Hua?
I hear that a lot. He's like, hey, he's slow and he's tired a lot.
Well, you know, he's fine for a round.
How old is he?
He is 30-something.
Ugh.
I mean, he's been in a lot of... He's actually only 31. He's not that old.
I was going to say, well, you know, I have more George eating a cheesesteak.
No, I wouldn't go that far now.
You know, who is coming off, you know, he's had an up and down UFC career. He lost to Leon Machida, won versus Leon Machida, lost to John Jones, won versus Forrest Griffin, lost to Dan Henderson, we got him in too.
You're on a roll tonight, yes!
Picked up a win against Brandon Vera, but, you know, he hasn't looked great against the elite of the division, and that loss to Alexander Gustafsson was one of those times. I'm not going to say Chael Sonnen is the cream of the division by any stretch of the imagination. Anyone dropping down to middleweight after this fight is not going to be the top of the lightweight heap. Sonnen is not that, but Sonnen has the tools to potentially take Hua into deep water and outpoint Hua. But I don't know. I don't have a lot of faith in Hua getting a submission on Sonnen that quickly.
Yeah.
He could knock him out. I'm not sure, but just looking at Sonnen's record here, I don't know that he's lost. He lost, you know, other than Silva and Jones were able to TKO him. That's a different level of striking for both of those guys.
And really, the Silva TKO was his own mistake that led to it.
Yeah, that was the knee more than anything.
Yeah.
That wasn't really a knockout. And Jones was kind of the same thing with the elbows and the punches. But, I mean, he wasn't, like, flash knocked out. So I don't see Hua, you know, necessarily getting a KO here. So I think his best bet's a potential submission. And Sonnen is susceptible to submissions. So... we'll see. I'm gonna lean here. I'm gonna take Hua, but I'm not feeling good about the pick.
I am going with Sonnen. Is this five rounds?
This is five rounds.
Wow. See, I don't think Hua could do the five.
Yeah.
I would think.
I'm sorry. Finish first.
I would think that Hua would go be strong the first two, and then Sonnen could just point his way to victory.
Why does somebody who have problems has problems sticking it out even fight at that point?
Well, because typically he's in three round fights, and three rounds he's been in five rounders too for titles. I mean, he's a former lightweight champion.
Right.
We're kind of poo pooing him a little bit, I'll say, but I think with the light heavyweight division, there's just so many title changes until it got to Jones that it was like, oh, he was a There's not much respect for that division until Jones came along. Because everybody was a champion there for a while. It went from Evans to Griffin to
Machida to Hua.
It just went everywhere. So there's not much respect when you say he's a former light heavyweight champion. Okay, well, so was Machida, who doesn't get any respect, frankly. At least from the judges.
No.
Yeah.
No.
But it's just one of those things. Can he do the stamina? I mean, he's been in a lot of fights, too. Besides just USC, he's been in Pride, and he's had, you know, the shoot boxing thing going on.
There have been fights where Hua's looked like he's got the cardio right.
Yeah.
And then there's been fights after that where he's not. So it's, you know, it's kind of like BJ Penn.
Yeah.
Some fights look great. Some fights, they don't look great. And it's just hard to say who's going to show up. But Hua is due.
He is
based
due.
Based on his up-down trajectory. So.
Yeah, win-loss, 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 win.
Yep.
So if we go, if it's like a roulette table, you just kind of say he's going to win this next one.
Yeah.
If it were a roulette table.
Yes.
But it's not.
It isn't.
So.
it's fighting. Shockingly.
It is fighting, but I would say that I think Sonnen needs a win in this division before he goes back to middleweight. I don't even know why he's fighting this fight. He's going to go back and fight Silva. Doesn't he want Silva? Not Anderson, but Vanderlei?
He wants Vanderlei, yeah.
Oh, good grief. That has the potential to be a train wreck, that one.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah, it could be a train wreck, or it could just be Vanderlei knocking Sonnen the hell out.
It very well could. Again, you don't know which Silva's going to show up. The one that fought Lieben or the one that fought Stan.
Hopefully the one that fought Stan, because that was a great fight.
That was a great fight. But there's our picks. That's coming up Saturday night. It's on the debut of Fox Sports 1.
And they did finally get clearance, so I am going to be able to watch the fight. Yes.
All right. So there you go. Even better.
Yes.
No.
So
more.
Wait, that's going to be on Fox Sports 1 when?
Saturday.
This Saturday. The Saturday night, Dan.
The Saturday
night. That's your DVR, Daniel.
Is the night that Speed shuts off my show and we get to talk about MMA more often. Yay. But I'm going to record it and watch it.
I'm sorry, Dan.
It's a good card probably to start with, Dan.
Okay. I told Kelly, much to her, like, I don't care, because she doesn't care. I told her, I was like, I'm going to use this to, you know, I'll DVR it and see what all this is about.
And the good thing is they're going to have a full schedule of past fights that they're going to show on there, the highlight shows, all those type of things. So it's going to be great for you. You can catch up with all the action. You can see why Anderson Silva is considered one of the best in the world, if not the best, even with a loss to some lucky kid.
This is the Knight Rider, Robert Knight, from New Moon Rising Wrestling. Have you ever dreamed of having your birthday party inside a professional wrestling ring? Well, now is your opportunity. You've seen the rest. Now it's time to experience the best. At New Moon Rising Wrestling's birthday bash birthday parties, we don't just offer unique and affordable party options. We create memories that will last a lifetime. We offer free outstanding party packages. All packages include great photo opportunities with the wrestlers and real championship belts, along with fun in a professional wrestling ring. For more information, go to nmrwrestling.com or call 609-820-2793 for the New Moon Rising Wrestling Birthday Bash.
All right, so that's a perfect segue into what happens this Saturday, Dan. And, of course, that is New Moon Rising Wrestling returns with Fight.
Fight! That's I had right. a better line, but I forgot.
Yes, but they return, and of course it's headlined by the Battle of Two Friends. That's right, it is...
I don't say they're friends anymore, dude.
Keikoa, the Flying Hawaiian, taking on Matt Sygon.
This has the potential, I believe, of being a match of the year in the indie circuit. Period. I am a firm believer in that.
It very well could.
And these guys... work and shoot know each other so well that this could be amazing. This could be really amazing. It's worth, in my opinion, is with all the other stuff going along and around that I won't say, this is worth the $10. That's going to be an incredible match. Because so many people locally know these two guys.
True.
And for this to happen right in the middle of South Jersey, come on down!
That's right. That's Proving Grounds. 1030 Delsey Drive, Building 4W in Deptford Township, New Jersey. Now, another match.
Oh, wait, are we doing our...
Yeah, might as well do it now.
Our predictions.
Oh, I wasn't going to predict, but I'm going to say Matt Sygon wins this one.
I was going to say the same. Wow. Okay. Going to say the same thing.
He looked very good in that, I give credit where credit's due, and he looked very good in the tournament. He was there in 150-degree heat, taking on all comers.
Was it that hot? All I know is, listen, I can't wait to see that DVD eventually.
It was like the surface of Mercury in there, Dan.
Because all I know is we called it, and I don't remember anything else. I remember the kick and the sound it made.
Indeed. Right to the face. Quite a moment. quite a moment indeed. Now, another match. Justin America taking on O-Dog.
No, I'm certainly not picking Justin America.
I go with Justin America.
I'm not.
I think he's picking up a very quick victory. And
to make up for the very quick loss last week.
Last week. You mean last
month. Last month.
Month.
Damn it.
Last month. You.
Yes, last month. Like I said, it was a blur.
I'll tell you what, Dan. He caught Justin America by surprise. And
I would say.
And that's what happened. He caught him by surprise. And, you know, it was a fluke victory. And we're going to see.
Tell that person to watch out there.
We're going to see that Justin's going to win.
I don't, well, unless he's got like 13 guys to back him up, I don't think he's going to beat him.
Well, I do. I have all faith in America and in Justin America.
I swear, if you know something I don't, again, Mr. Gacy boy, I'm going to be
well,
very...
speaking of Mr. Gacy is taking on Crazy Ivan, and if you listened last week, you know I don't agree with it, but... He's taking him on. I tried to talk Joe out of it even.
What? Well, what do you have against him beating up? Because even I'm picking Gacy on this one.
I just don't think it's the right move for Mr. Gacy.
Oh.
I had another opponent lined up to show his medal.
Oh, God.
That's right. The returning Steve.
Pull the package?
No, the returning Steve Zaff.
Is he returning?
I don't
Not
know.
Now, right?
I don't know. But he's taking on Crazy Ivy, Poison Ivy. I don't know what the hell's going on. He's taking on Crazy Ivan.
Justin America is taking on the Penguin.
And I'm going, of course, with Mr. Gacy.
I'm going with Gacy on this one, mostly because I keep getting weird phone calls telling me it's my best interest.
We have a tag team title bout, the Legion of Anarchy. A very strong team. They have defended those belts for quite some time, ever since winning them in a vacancy match. They're taking on the Argyle Express, and that's Damian Adams and newcomer Dirty Money.
Dirty Money. Harry and I were talking about this on Sunday, and I said, you know, I have nothing against Damian Adams, but I don't know who this other guy is, and I've seen LOA as a tag team, and I'm telling you, if I was their opponent, I would have lost the match if they walked to the ring. So I'm going with LOA on this one.
I am as well. Mike Reed, part of the Burgundy Brigade, taking on the dominant one, Ty Reno.
That's a tough one. I'm going to go with Reed on this one. If he could just get away from the Burgundy Brigade. He doesn't need them. And I don't care particularly. You need to be a good guy. That doesn't... No. I'm just saying the Rotund Brigade just needs to go away.
I disagree with that.
What? They... fine.
But
he hasn't done anything great since he's... There was no reason for that.
I said, he's been with CZW for years. And it is with a great honor that I bring on Robbie Marino. How are you doing tonight, sir?
I'm doing well, Dean. How about yourself?
I am doing well as well. And you are also speaking with Dan and Chris. And I wanted to start out, because you have been with CZW since pretty much its inception. How did you get your start in CZW? Obviously, it was with Zandig. And just how did you get your start in the business?
Well, the business in general, that actually happened probably when I was about 14, 15 years old, actually. I had kind of finagled myself into a job, if you want to call it that, at the ECW arena, which was basically just pretending to work, pretending to sweep, pretending to set up chairs. Just, I mean, there wasn't really much work for that a 14-year-old could really do, so I just tried to look busy. And, you know, around that time, I met Bertie, Trent Acid. Me and him had, like, taken karate class together when we were, like, 10 or 11, but we didn't really know each other outside of karate. But I'd seen him again in at the arena when I was, like, 14, turning 15. And eventually he had told me there was a wrestling school that he was going to, and I didn't believe him at first. And then I took a couple trains and took a bus and walked, like, a mile. And, you know, here we are in the middle of, like, Kensington, and lo and behold, there's a wrestling school. So we were, like, 15, taking bumps. And I still remember. It was December 10th, I guess. Yeah, because it was 2 days after the Immaculate Conception, December 8th. That's how I remember things. And I had off from school, and I went and got a shirt made because that Sunday, the 10th, I was wrestling on a show. And I was, like, I was a sophomore in high school. I was 15. And, you know, it was at the wrestling school. So I started around that then, I guess. And then later on, I mean, basically, I couldn't really get booked on any shows. I was, like, 15, 16, but you know, around the time I had the pleasure to train with Reckless Youth and Don Montoya and a lot of, like, the guys from the area, a lot of the ECW guys would come and work at this gym at times and stuff. So, you know, you basically just got in the ring and, like, did practice with these guys and did whatever they said. And, you know, that's how we trained. You know, myself, Trent, Billy Real, Nick Burke, Frank Say, who does AGT Radio, ATG Radio, if you're familiar with that, out in Las Vegas, which is a boxing MMA-type show. He was also training with us. Joe Coster, who's now a boxer in Philly. So we had a nice little tight crew, and, you know, we were working shows pretty early on, but we couldn't get booked that many places because we were underage. And when we were 18, we kind of all found out about CZW at the same time and started training at that school, in addition to the Pitbull school also.
Oh, wow.
Which was the GWA, the Grande Wrestling Alliance, which I never worked for them. I just went to CZW.
I mean, did you get any trouble for joining a wrestling school that early? I mean, that young?
Well, it wasn't really like a traditional school. Like, I never did any of the things that the guys do in wrestling school now. I literally just would get in there with workers and just work and learn, and you know, that was kind of how we all learned, and which is actually very much a throwback to the Southern way of learning, that a lot of the Southern workers, they learned in the ring, you know. No, granted, we weren't working, you know, we weren't making the towns and making the long drives that you hear about and stuff like that. I mean, we were young kids basically, you know, doing this after school and doing this like on the weekends and stuff. But now, I never really caught any flack because it was just something that, you know, I was very, you know, at the time we had moved out of South Philly and up to Bucks County, and I, you know, here I was, I almost feel bad in a way. I kind of see the perspective now as a parent, you know, now that I have a son of my own. My dad, you know, he worked so hard to get us out of South Philly, get us into a nice house in the suburbs, and here I am immediately taking as many methods of public transportation possible to get right back down to the heart of the city to try to be a wrestler. You know, so,
yeah,
I definitely caught a little flack, but I'll tell you what, you know, my father was at my first, like, real big show, which was the infamous NWA Truck Stop show in South Philly, which was the show where the main event was Ian Rodden versus, I believe, Bull Payne in, like, a Four Corners of Hell match, if anybody remembers that, which was, like, Mousetrap and Glass
and
Thumbtack and stuff,
yeah. Yep.
You know, so I had to sell five tickets. Carluzzo had me sell five tickets to get on the show. You know, I was like, hey, bro, you're going to go sell tickets. So, you know, yeah,
he's
man,
a name.
He's the
man. I haven't heard that name in a long time.
Dennis was definitely the man. And, you know, he, you know, God bless him. He was really good to me. And, I mean, I didn't work with him that much, but, you know, he could have easily treated me like a pile of dog shit. And can I say that, dude? I'm sorry.
Yeah, he got word.
Okay. Yeah, he could have easily treated me like that. And, you know, being that, but he was, you know, always very gracious and always very cool. But, yeah, so that was, like, my first real show. And I'll tell you what, my family was there. I mean, I had to sell five tickets, so I sold them to family members. And, you know, we were in the opening match. And afterwards, while we were walking back through the curtain, Jim Cornette was walking out to the ring with Ron Christopher. So this was really crazy for me. This was 2 years before I turned 16, you know.
Whoa.
So, yeah, a few days before I turned 16, this happened. And Dan Severn was on the show, and he came up to us before the show and shook our hands. And actually, this was the day that Captain Redneck, Dick Murdoch, died, because Dennis Carluzzo announced it in the locker room at the show. And I remember it being, like, a really heavy vibe because, there, you know, Cornette was there and, you know, a lot of people from down south were there. It was, you know, Carluzzo's NWA shows were kind of like that, you know. And
Zandig
was on the show. A little bit of trivia for you. Zandig actually was on the show as the Icon.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, crazy, right?
What year was that?
That was 1996. That was June 15th, 1996. Yeah, I got a memory like an elephant, man.
Sorry. No, you need to in this business, trust me. You know that.
No, definitely.
Now, you're 60, how much experience in ring do you have at this point where they're like, yeah, sell five tickets, you're on the show?
I mean, not a lot outside of practice. And you got to remember, I'm not even 16 years old yet. And I didn't look. I mean, I came out to the ring and people were yelling stuff like that. Like, yeah, what are you going to eighth grade graduation after this? And, you know.
Shit. I mean, so they tell you're on the show. What do you remember the first match? Does it, or is it just a blank in your head right now?
No, my first match was actually on that show that was at the wrestling school, because, I mean, they were actually with people that paid to come to and stuff, you know, similar to, like, you know, kind of like when New Move. I'll tell you what, Darren O'Dog was around back then.
Yeah.
I mean, Ron Starr, some guys that were super gracious to me, I just want to make sure to mention them. You know, O'Dog, Ron Starr, those guys, the West Side Playboys. I mean, Ron Starr had Westside Bad Boys. Ron Starr had, you know, a little bed back when I was, like, a junior in high school that I worked for, and he had TV. So I had, like, actually wrestled on TV when I was, like, 16, you know, not even 17, at a junior in high school. So,
wow.
I mean, it was very local TV, but, you know, and it was something that, like, you know, I wish could have continued and happened more, but it was tough, you know? I mean, it was tough to... I mean, I worked for the company that Ron helped run with this guy, Ricky Starr, and we worked at the Chester. I won a Cruiserweight title that night. I mean, I won it, and I never saw it again. That was it, you know? But that was what they wanted to do on the show, have a title change. So I won, I think it was the NWCW Cruiserweight Championship, from Joe Costa, the kid who's a boxer now.
Yeah.
I won it from him. Yeah, and it was Northwestern Championship Wrestling. And there was actually a guy on the show at that time named Latin Dragon who wore a satin jacket and almost looked like Snoop Dogg. He wore a satin jacket with the cursive writing that said Latin Dragon, and it had, you know, a sewn dragon emblem on it, kind of like a karate jacket with the heels and, like, the Karate Kid was there.
So how long goes between, all right, you have your first match, how long, I mean, did you get immediate feedback, or was it, oh, God, I think I stumped the joint up.
Feedback. That's the story of my life. I'm like Dangerfield at this point. I never get positive reinforcement from anybody.
Wow.
It's the truth. Come on.
So what,
you know, real
what
talk.
Kept you, what, get, no, real talk. So what keeps you going? You're a young kid. You're not getting any positive feedback. What keeps you going at this point, being the experience you have?
I know I'm over. I know I'm over with the crowd. I know that no matter what somebody says, I'm going to go out there and get probably a better reaction than the person who says that about me. And I can't, you know, I can't really, I don't really do much, you know, ring-wise, and even when I'm managing, you know, it's the bottom line. I like doing wrestling because I'm good at it. That's what keeps me going, honestly, is the fact that I like doing it because I think I'm pretty damn good at it. I think I cut pretty good promos, and I think I get a character over pretty well, and it's because I care about it, and I love it, and it's all I want to do. And I feel like if there's something in your life that you want to do, then you better be trying very hard to be the very best at it. Now, granted, it took me a long time to kind of come to that conclusion, you know, as far as me wanting to do it in ring. It really took some heavy things happening, you know, as far as, you know, obviously I brought up I trained with Trent, you know. Well, it took him passing for me to realize I didn't want to just be a manager anymore. I wanted to be back in the ring again full time, which is, you know, what I've all I want to do, and honestly, I really won't, other than certain circumstances, I won't even accept anything less at this point. I don't care at all to manage, you know. Obviously, when it comes to things like Extreme Rising and things like that, I'm happy to do commentary and broadcasting for them, because I grew up really idolizing a lot of ECW guys, despite what a lot of them people say about them. You know what I mean? I'm happy to be a part of that product, and obviously, you know, the truth is, I'll be moving towards an in-ring thing eventually there if they start running again, you know. But, you know, the point is, what keeps me going is that now, I really have a goal now. Now, I mean, obviously what kept me going then was I knew I was getting good reactions from the crowd, and I knew that I shouldn't listen to what people in the back say. I should listen to the crowd. But, you know, sometimes politics can get you down. It got me down for a while, you know. And I allowed it too often, you know.
How do you fight against the backstage politics, as you put it? And I'm not naming names. That's up for you to do if you wanted to.
No, let him name names. He's good at real talk.
But
you know I'm good at naming names. I mean, I'm not a snitch, but I will call people out.
Like, how do you fight against, like, a booker that doesn't book you the way the way you feel you could be best utilized?
I guess what you do is you pack up your shit and you leave. See, here's the thing. I have a philosophy for my life. My life is like this. I don't need the beach. I just want a little sand. And the reason I bring this up is because, you know, like in recent times, people that relied on the beach, like literally relied on the beach, like who had homes down the shore and a lot of money invested down there, they lost a lot of stuff. And in life, when you want the beach, when you want it all, when the storm comes, you're kind of fucked. Me, on the other hand, I just want my sand. So I'll take my sand, and I'll move when the storm comes, and I'll be okay. I can be okay with my sand somewhere else. So I try not to have too much invested in places that I feel aren't going to utilize them possibly. Not emotionally, not professionally. And I meant to say probably there. Or properly, excuse me. I'm sorry.
Properly, we got you.
Yeah, properly. You know, if I feel like the place isn't going to use me correctly, then I'm going to make sure to not get too invested in them. If something else comes up the day of that show, maybe I'll take that something else first and foremost, you know, and I'll look to branch out as quick as possible. And that's kind of what I'm trying to do now, guys. You know, bottom line is this. I feel like I have a lot more to offer, and if I'm not going to be, you know, if that's not welcome, then I need to go where that's welcome and not waste my time.
Well, this kind of brings us up. I know we're kind of jumping around from the beginning of your career toward the end of your, not that you're near the end of your career, but something that just recently happened. When you were, I believe it was New Heights, and you grabbed the mic, and that was something that wasn't planned. After the blackout match, do you care to talk about that moment? What brought it on? And you're talking about real talk. That was a lot of real talk that you were given there.
Well, the funny thing is a lot of people seem to agree with what I said, but yet I caught a substantial amount of heat for it. And, you know, so much so that it's, you know, it's probably things will never quite be the same for me anymore. You know, it is what it is. But why it happened is because I just, you know, I felt like I just felt maybe a little emotional. That was, you know what? Really, in retrospect, I guess that was my birthday present to Chris Cash, because I said things that that company needs to be. And I said things about a crowd that needed to be said. And if people can hate me for it, but people don't seem to hate me for it. The only people that seem to hate me for it are maybe the people that feel that the words rang the truest and maybe, you know, were aimed at them. And it wasn't aimed at anybody directly. It's just speaking the truth. You know, let's face it. You know, things, CZW is not the company it used to be. The fans aren't the fans they used to be. And it's not like it's different people. It's the same people. It's not like there's new people in the crowd. It's the same people, and they're, for some reason, you know, just feel like it's just, you know, it's their show. It's they're the show now. You know, let's ruin this match. No matter what these guys do, let's just chant a bunch of ridiculous shit and ruin this match. And really, I felt bad, for the Catalyst. Because yeah. I felt like, you know, they're working hard and trying to get over with this crowd. You know, Dustin's come back from so many injuries, you know what I mean? Which, you know, these kids really want it, you know? And the crowd doesn't give them the benefit of the doubt at all. It's like, they just, I don't know. It just, to me, I was just really upset out there. I feel like there's the locker room. I mean, I would change a lot of things about CZW, you know? And I feel like it's not a lost cause, but for me, it probably is. You know, at this point, to me, I feel like in that locker room, I'm like the oldest brother in a huge family of brothers, and the rest of my siblings hate my gut. I wish I would just move the fuck out.
It's funny you say that about the crowd, because one of my biggest gripes about, indie wrestling in general, is the friggin' audience. Why come to a show if you're going to A, shit on it, since we're cursing, and B, not react? You paid your money to be there. Be part of the show. Don't just sit there with your hand. I've been to shows everywhere. I'm not going to mention particulars, Delaware, where people sit on their hands the whole show. You got 130 people in there, and it sounds like five people sitting there going, and it drives me crazy. So I'm glad you said
that. Another thing that bothers me, it's like, would these people go to, like, you know, Chris Angel, and they're like, oh, he's on tables, you know, yelling it out, or, you know, David Blaine, he's using a mirror. Just, you know, it's so ridiculous.
Well,
it's so ridiculous. It's like let's call it what it is. I don't know what these other guys do when they come on your show. I don't know if they come in here saying, and I'll tell you what, Dean, you know, on the 24th, I'm going to beat that guy and I'm going to pin him and this and that. But I will not insult my audience's intelligence. Here's the thing. For the non-intelligent fans out there, the so-called smart marks, they pay money to come see grown men fake fights in their underwear. And then they pick it apart.
They don't even do
all that just to enjoy it. They do it just to ridicule it and critique it. How ridiculous is that? They spend money to do this. What type of people do that?
I'm going to spend
a shit ton of money this weekend. I'm going to spend a shit ton of money this weekend to go see grown men in their underwear, fake fight, oiled up. And on top of it, I'm not even going to sit there and enjoy it. I'm going to sit there, and I'm going to hate every minute of it.
How many people live
their life like that?
Robbie, it's like I always bring this up when this is mentioned. Kevin Nash was getting crapped on by Ric Flair, and he was talking about, you know, I'm a 16-time champion, and Kevin Nash was like, you know, I know he's crapping on me. I know he was great, but I hate to tell Rick this, but it's fake.
Right. It's a show, you know. And for some, I mean, it's just
there's
so weird
a difference between doing a podcast and talking about things that are happening in indie wrestling and on TV, and then sitting here going, you know what I think? I think that you shouldn't have done this wrestle in the middle of this
when
match
you're at the
here.
Show, and when you're at the show, Dean, you're not sitting here going, oh, he blew that spot. Oh, you fucked that up.
Well,
you know what.
It's interesting you bring this up, because at Tangled Web, Drew Gulak's wrestling Masada, he goes to the top rope, does a shoulder block to Masada's knee, which makes perfect sense, but what did the crowd do?
You up there. Yeah. You fucked up. Shut up!
I mean, it's a perfect point that you're making.
It's upsetting to me because you got to remember, dude, I worked at the ECW arena. I grew up around people that appreciated wrestling. And, yeah, granted, they innovated that UF Up chant, but that was few and far between, you know?
Yeah,
and also,
true.
Obviously, Drew was going after his knee, too. That's also the most ridiculous thing. It's like, and that just goes to show you, they can't wait to do it. They can't wait to do it because they're sick, you know? These are sick human beings.
Well, what he meant to do was actually scientifically was jump off into a shoulder block, but he fell on his knee. He slipped on the top rope, obviously.
Right, but here's the thing. If it's real, wouldn't that happen?
Exactly.
Wouldn't that happen?
No.
You know, like, it's so ridiculous. These people are so... Dude, you're just dealing with a bunch of dummies that just, for some reason, think that, you know, they want to... For them, it's almost like you got to think, dude, these people... spend 8 to 12 hours a day getting treated like shit by some dickhead in like an office or a factory or somewhere else, and they wait all week to just come do this and just be able to just,
okay.
Now they have somebody they can yell at.
Now you get
you know,
personal,
dude, you know what? I mean, we all have jobs. You know, we all choose our own, but we also all choose our own path in life. And
yeah,
the thing is,
right.
If most of us could detach ourselves from material things that we don't need, we wouldn't have to get treated like shit at a job we don't want to be at.
That is so true.
I'll bring this up. I work in nutrition, and I have a young kid who came in here today to talk to me, and he's telling me how he's taking all types of, you know, things to help him fall asleep at night and everything. And I'm like, oh, what do you do? You know, he tells me I have to be up early in the morning. He tells me, where's this job? I'm like, do you mind if I ask what you make? He tells me, I'm like, so wait a minute. You're 24. You're taking sleeping pills every night of your life to wake up and go work this shit job all day and get treated like shit by some dickhead. I'm like, maybe you should just get a different job and not be addicted to sleeping pills anymore. And bam, you know what I mean? But you have to detach yourself. So my point being, though, these people that probably have miserable lives, for them, it makes them feel good to be able to, you know, give us a hard time and try to be mean-spirited. It's one thing to give heat to the bad guys and cheer the good guys, but it's another thing, you know, the good guys and bad guys. I'm talking about not breaking kayfabe, and I'm sitting here saying good guys and bad guys. The heels and the faces, you know. It's one thing to give heat. It's another thing to ruin the show for the people that are actually trying to enjoy it.
Unfortunately, our interview with Robbie Marino ended abruptly due to issues with Blog Talk Radio. We are working with Robbie to bring you the entire interview as it should be heard. Thank you, everyone, for all your support.